line one of page two, the phrase significant contribution, is exactly the sort of imprecise phrase that would delight the speculators in agricultural lands of Douglas County. All a county landowner would have to do is say a portion of his property is not making a, quote, significant contribution to his operation, and if it is soil class 5 or greater, he could begin to divide off 20-acre lots in the middle of a huge agricultural preserve. No, the original language that only if the land were not part of a farm that grows $20,000 a year for three of the last 5 years will offer the protection the EFU zones require for stability. Again on line 13, page 2, there is a problem. The forest site index of 85 cubic feet per acre is workable for the Willamette Valley. But much productive forest land in southern as well as eastern Oregon could be lost since an 85 index is often a viable one, and even lower ones are viable in those areas.
Mr. Chair? Is that the ORS site where you get the 85 cubic feet?
That's a site class index, and I think it is not the same as the forest class site, which is like 1 through 5, and they're much lower numbers.
Okay. Any parking?
It's based on wood production per acre per year.
Okay, are you working off the bee and gross bill?
I beg your pardon?
Are you working from the bee and gross bill?
He must have
from the draft?
Okay. Yeah, I'm working from a copy of the same draft you're working on, Representative Parkinson.
Thanks.
And of course, we've had many drafts and many amendments. I have the originals and all the way through, but they're back in my briefcase.
Number seven.
Yeah. All right. I assume we're working from the same one, but these things change almost daily. And living some distance away, I don't always receive the latest draft.
Sure.
Did you have a problem with my
index? Well, I had the bill. And
I do not. I was working with a draft.
Mr. Chair, that's why I asked that question, too. I didn't see 85 in the line on line 13, page 1 of the printed bill.
There was an
Oregon revised statute citing, so I appreciate getting the right
All right.
Document.
Thank you for
Mr.
the question.
Mr. Chairman, just for clarity, what are we working from? Which draft?
Legislative Council 237A-7 of 6683.
Okay. Mr. Chairman?
Representative Fishley.
I shared the confusion. I did follow this draft. Can you explain to me why the proposed amendments are to the A engrossed version, and then there's the B engrossed version? Now, how did we, can that be rationalized?
Representative Priestley, those amendments, the 237-7 amendments to the A engrossed version of Senate Bill 237 are identical to the B engrossed Bill 237.
Oh. I didn't understand what you said. I have Senate Bill 237A-7 amendments.
Those are identical. That draft is identical to the printed Senate Bill 237B engrossed.
Mr. Chair?
Except the pages do not match.
As a suggestion, we obviously have two different measures that we're dealing from. The witnesses, as they present their testimony, might tell us what they're operating from, so we can make notes on whichever item.
The substance is identical. It's okay. Just the page and line
numbers. But the references to page and line numbers are important for the purpose of testimony.
Will you all excuse me for the confusion, please? I'll continue. I only have a short way to go. Had we gone to line 13, page 2, where there obviously are more problems than one?
Mr. Chair, could you please repeat the first problem you were pointing out, too, to make sure that we all have that on the document that
yes.
we're working with?
With line 1 of page 2, and it refers to the phrase significant contribution. Have you that?
Yes, thank
okay.
you.
All right. I urge a restoration of these important components of a complicated and highly necessary fine-tuning effect. With Senate Bill 237 once more intact, those of us in professional agriculture who drafted this legislation will have kept faith both with our friends who own marginal lands and our brothers and sisters on Oregon's farms and ranches who ask for the protection statewide land use planning offers. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman. Questions, Representative Parkinson.
Yeah, going back to 85 or more cubic feet, you feel that that's not restrictive enough for eastern Oregon, where that's an average or slightly below average, I think.
That's correct. And then I'd like to say to Representative Anderson and to you too, Representative Parkinson, that this morning I called several of our local foresters in Douglas County, and it is not even restrictive enough there, the heart of the timber capital, because both in the U.S. Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management and in much of the private timber holdings lying between 500 and probably 2,500 and 3,000 feet, there's a good deal of this index and below, down to the 60s and 70s that is presently in good production. They do make the point that it requires more acreage to produce the same volume of timber on these lands, but they are very viable, and a great amount of that land is now in production. Yes,
Mr. Chairman? And then in the valley here, I think we've heard testimony that figure would have to be like 200 cubic feet, and the point I'm making is why have it in there? If in the valley 85 cubic feet would never apply, then it's a phony thing to put in the bill.
Well, perhaps. We felt that 85 was a reasonable floor in the valley, because although most lands in the valley will produce 85, I don't believe they all will.
That isn't the testimony I heard, but anyway, it would appear if this doesn't apply that we shouldn't even have it in there, that it's really deceiving the people, believing there's a way for yield to qualify.
Well, of course, in drafting one of these proposals, Representative, we always worry that our limitations will not be sufficient to stop a great deal of land from passing through the resource zones. And large areas getting away from us in these large preserves of zoned resource property. So we really do have to be careful. And we ground tested this system in some of the counties, and I apologize, I don't have the figures for you, but land does sift through, and in some counties a good deal. I would say that it probably is dependent upon how careful they were with their exceptions policies. I think counties where they did not apply exceptions closely, there is going to be a good amount of land come through with this marginal lands bill. And in counties, I believe, like Douglas, for instance, that had very closely scrutinized exceptions work, there probably won't be so much. But you must understand that it, from our standpoint, since it's our duty to, partly at least we see it, to protect the resource lands of agriculture and forestry, we could not ask you people to open a floodgate for these lands for subdivision.
Not to argue with you or anything, but I would assume that in my district there's no land.
Where is your district?
Marion County. I'd assume there's no land that couldn't grow 85 cubic feet per year. So for my district, that shouldn't even be in there because it's very deceptive.
That's a possibility, and I couldn't argue with you because I really don't know.
That's all, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Bill, if you have something prepared, you might leave it with the clerk so we can have it.
Thank you, Andy.
But also, Bill, you might give some consideration maybe to providing the committee with some alternate cubic feet for, not, you know, the coast range in our area is much more productive than over where we live in Douglas County in eastern Oregon. It's different from the Willamette Valley.
Sure do.
I know, that's why we've been taking a look at maybe using some other type of forestry land classification other than the cubic foot tank. So,
I think that you will find that to contact the forestry people themselves, they're very open about it and very anxious to cooperate, and they are as concerned about protecting their resource lands as those of us in agriculture. I have a difficulty in speaking for them, because while we share common problems, the technical problems with our resources are different. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Thank you.
I'm beginning to see why this bill received 25 votes in the Senate out of the possible 29, I guess. It's interesting to contrast Mr. Allison's testimony with Mr. Strader's testimony. Both of them were extremely critical of the bill, but I think coming from a perspective that's probably quite different, it's intriguing to see that dynamic work.
I'd like to suggest the committee and Beth maybe that we might have some invited testimony maybe from the State Department of Forestry. Come in and give us some information on types of forest land and cubic footage and so on that may might be a sort of a neutral source that type of thing in one of our upcoming committee meetings if that's satisfactory.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Parkinson?
I'd really be interested in hearing about the soil classifications too, and whether the line on a map is what did the witness say that it was couple acres wide or something, the line.
Well, I guess you
get that someplace.
I better put State Department of Agriculture on there, some land expert invited testimony.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hill.
We're not in work session, but I'd just like to point out, it seems to me that in talking about productivity of land, we want to achieve what's the economical limit for producing the crop, in this case the trees, whether it's pine or fir. We don't just want to be arbitrary, but we want to determine what's feasible.
I think Representative Bagron pointed out that the species might have a lot to do with it. You're absolutely right. I'm going to butcher this. Paul Kush, St. Paul.
Chairman Anderson, members of the committee, I'm here representing Oregon Farm Bureau NER Committee. I am from Marion County. I'm a full-time farmer, a third-generation farmer on the same farm.
Paul, would you identify yourself for the record, please?
Paul Kirsch.
Okay, close.
I am a strong supporter of land use planning, and I think that the marginal lands bills goes a long ways towards resolving the problem that we have implementing Goal 3, and I think that it also answers the problems that were mentioned in the Governor's Task Force report on land use planning. I would like to highlight a few things about this law that appeals to me. First of all, I feel that this law, or this bill, will address the regional problems that we're facing now with Goal 3. The complaints from Eastern Oregon are that Goal 3 is unworkable, it's inflexible, and with the marginal lands, I feel that it gives these ranchers and landowners in Eastern Oregon something to work with. In the Willamette Valley, I do not feel threatened because of this bill, because my understanding is that a very small percentage of the land in the Willamette Valley, and I'm from Marion County and in Marion County, will qualify for the marginal lands, and that was my great concern when I first heard of this bill. I didn't want a bunch of separate parcels out in farmland that are going to suddenly grow houses, and I'm satisfied that with this bill that won't happen. We're having a real serious problem with non-farm dwellings popping up in the farmlands. I have an example of one that just occurred in Polk County. Just this past April, the Board of Commissioners approved a non-farm dwelling on a four-acre parcel. Under current law, the county is supposed to deny non-farm dwellings unless they are on land unsuitable for farm use. This parcel is good Class 3 land. It sits between two large farms, one 529 acres, the other 297 acres. The four-acre parcel is farmed as part of the adjacent farm. The Planning Commission properly denied the application. The County Board overruled the Planning Commission and approved it. This is the Ratzlaff non-farm dwelling case. And we're faced with these problems all the time. I feel that agriculture is an industry. I consider myself a manufacturer of food and fiber. I think what I do is no different than what a fellow who works in town in a factory. I think that we've got to preserve our future, and I don't think that by letting people develop farmland for other uses is going to guarantee me that. I have my whole future tied up. If the good Lord willing, I hope to farm another 30-40 years, and I need the assurance that I can do that. And by limiting non-farm dwellings in EFU zones, I feel that my future is secure in this state. And there is one change that I would like to suggest. I have the B in Gross Senate Bill 237, page 5, line 30. I would like to omit the word major. The dwelling or activities associated with the dwelling will not force A. It reads now major. I would like to delete that word and just have it read, the dwelling or activities associated with the dwelling will not force a change in or measurably increase the cost of accepted farming practices on nearby lands devoted to farm use. I think that if the word major is let in there, left in, it will, it seems to me to be rather ambiguous.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, definitely true.
Is the position you stated, Paul, is that your own personal position, or is that the official position of the Farm Bureau on 237?
It's, or both? Are you on
the, not on that necessarily, on that little change, but on your testimony on the
this
point.
Is the position of Farm Bureau. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Van Loon.
I think maybe we should ask Scott Ashkin to give us the agreed on statement that was made at the last Farm Bureau annual meeting. Maybe he should give that to us. However, I happen to be a Farm Bureau member, not on the Legislative Committee this particular time, but I know that not all Farm Bureau members agree to that. They hammer out their policy much like we do here in the legislature. So some may agree to it and others may not, and the majority of the delegates came up with that conclusion this particular round. I think I'm right on that, Scott.
Mr. Chairman? Does that mean, Liz, that we should not recognize the position that the Farm Bureau takes? Is that a reason not to recognize their position as an official position?
Not necessarily, but I just, the way you asked the question, I thought that that was what you were...
Well, I'm curious what kind of guidance you're giving me. Then. Should I listen to that as the Farm Bureau position, or should I disregard that?
Mr. Chairman, I guess we recognize it like we recognize the decisions that come out of this body.
Mr. Chairman? Maybe it depends on which committee we're sitting on at a particular time.
I think it also depends on whether you agree or disagree with the position, too.
I happen to be on the fence.
Mr. Chairman, I do have a question, Mr. Chairman. Did you have a question? Okay. Paul, you're a young guy. You're a young farmer. Is your farm a typical farm for your area? Is it about same size and same products that most people
yes,
around here?
Yes, I think so. I don't grow exact crops my neighbors do, but as far as size and what we're doing, I would say so, yes.
What is it contiguous? Is it one piece of land, or is it several scattered pieces of land? What's your acreage, roughly, just roughly?
We farm in about a 10-mile radius, which we farm 7 miles south of St. Paul to across the river from Newburgh, which is 8 miles north of St. Paul. Mm-hmm. So it's about 15-mile radius.
And it's scattered in different pieces?
In four separate farms.
Four separate farms?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's it really means a lot to us to be able to farm large lots of ground. It makes it a lot easier to manage. It's more economical. It just doesn't pay to be farming all over the county.
And if these pieces, your pieces are separate, if in between that land was parcelized and some was built on, it was divided up more to make it more difficult to try to achieve the bigger lots, right? And that's one of the reasons you support this type of Marshall Land Bill, because it would be easier to farm economically the bigger the lot you have, right?
Representative Hill, I would agree with that, yes.
Do you have any marginal lands in your farm at all that you would consider marginal lands under the bill?
Not to my knowledge. Not in our immediate area. Mm-hmm. Most of our soil is Class 1 and Class 2.
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Parkinson.
Paul, the four-acre parcel in Polk County that you referred to, how was that four-acre parcel created?
You know, how was it created?
Yeah. I'd assume it wasn't homesteaded, so it was split off one of the two big farms that sits in between?
My understanding is that it was created, it's the part of it is farmed with another farm, but it was, I don't know when it was created.
We would have to assume, though, it was split off one of those two big farms, wouldn't we? Pretty much.
I would assume so. Yeah. But.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Paul.
Greg Malinowski.
Good evening. My name is Greg Malinowski, and I don't have my thing numbered by line or anything, but I think I can get my ideas across on the various things. Number one, as mentioned earlier, I have a problem with the term substantial or significant contribution. As the gentleman said, it would just be a way of keeping lawyers busy. It would tie things up, and people would spend dozens of hours in meetings and court and everything else. It doesn't nail anything down. One man's significant contribution is another man's pittance. And I don't see how that would be workable at all. Another item that I see that you're dealing with somewhat is life estates, and I think that is a very appropriate way to allow an older person to retire on a farm, stay there, and yet sell the farm to another person. Otherwise, you end up every generation or so creating another parcel, another non-farm unit, and just keep sitting out there. It'd be much more appropriate to go through a life estate, gives that person the security to stay there, and yet does not create a multitude of non-farm parcels down over the years. I am concerned about allowing also non-farm development on the lower classes of land in the EFU zones. We have on our farm, we have 60 acres, it's a family farm. We have 60 acres over there, and it's rolling. We have some swampy areas, we have some rocky areas, definitely marginal. But what we've done is we have used the rocky areas to put outbuildings on and to park our equipment on so we don't take up the good soil. The swampy areas, we now have two ponds for fish or for irrigation equipment. We make use of what you've got. When you have lemons, make lemonade. And I think that limiting, you know, every farm I think needs some areas that are a little substandard just to have some other uses there. You don't want to take up Class 1 soil for barns and sheds if you don't have to. You want to make the most of what you've got. And even on the slopes, you could put in Christmas trees. Not forestry, but Christmas trees as a crop. Or in some cases, one gentleman in our neighborhood has put up a dike along a steep slope and even used a slope to put a pond up there. In Multnomah County, as far as these different sized parcels go, in Multnomah County it is possible to make a full-time living on 20 acres. Are you going to deny those people EFU status? And tell them, I'm sorry, you're marginal. They're making a full-time living on 20 acres. And it may not make much difference today what you can do and can't do and how you're taxed on EFU and marginal, but it might later. If you can make a full-time living on it.
Mr. Chairman? I'm from down Lane County. What can you do on such a small piece to make a living? Intensive?
Ornamentals.
Ornamentals?
Ornamentals and nursery crops. Very big. Takes a lot of work. But 20 acres is not that big of a piece, and you can make a full-time living on it. My concern also is that in dropping the area you consider for marginal land from 320 to 100, I think it's really hard to tell exactly what's going on by roping off 100 acres, leaving out everything else going around it, and just say, we're going to consider this as a stand by itself. There may be some very large farms around there. And this is another way of just nickel and diming into an area. I think 500 or 1,000 acres. The more you study the area, the more you'll see whether that area really is marginal or not, rather than just taking 100 acres and fencing them off and going just by what's there without regard at all to anything around it.
Mr. Chair, question to staff. Where in the bill is that 100 acres? I forgot.
If you want to look at your LC draft 237-7, it's in page 2, line 5, and page 2, line 9.
Thank you.
Up there in Washington County, we have problems with water table. Some of the wells in the area outside the urban growth boundary have gone to salt. Some of those areas may indeed be marginal, and the county has done lots of them for 5 and 10. They don't seem particularly interested in the fact that more people sucking off that water table are just going to draw the salt closer and closer to the surface. And apparently, it's not going to be a problem for the people who are selling the property. It's going to be a problem for the people who are buying the property. And I think this is something else you have to take into consideration, too. If you're going to open up an area for marginal development, shouldn't somebody be responsible for seeing that the people who buy the property are going to be able to do something with it? And that involves other things than just soil capabilities. It involves service provision and water table in our area. I'm a little concerned, too, about using an income test as far as saying this ground is marginal because so-and-so didn't make much money on it. You can't say that a business is not needed simply because some guy who's managing it, one guy who's managing it, can't make a profit at it. You give me the best piece of ground in Oregon, and if I put in pineapples or tobacco or something, I can guarantee you that I can show that I can't make any money on that land, and it's terrible. I think a great deal depends on what you do with it, and that has to be taken into consideration. Now, I understand you're getting a lot of pressure to allow more farm units to be broken up. There are a lot of farmers in this area that won't be satisfied until things are so flexible that they can do what they want. And that's what it's coming down to. As I see it, that's really what it's coming down to. More and more loopholes all the time. A marginal lands bill, I think, is a good thing to set aside those areas. But that should not be a thing of making it flexible. That should make it more certain. If you have land that meets this qualification, then fine. If you don't, then it's this. And there it is, rather than just making it more flexible. Because I've been involved in the planning on a local level for a long time, 10 and hundreds of hours, and things are getting so flexible that you hardly have a leg to stand on if you're coming in there to say, hey, is this a good idea to convert this farm to something else? On our farm, I'm working part-time right now. We'd like to develop our farm as a farm. I'm not sure that we're making that $20,000 gross test, 60 acres. But we'd like to have the opportunity to do so. And not all farms, you can't tailor a farm zone just to large grain farms or to large cattle farms. You need to tailor it also to those people who can make it when they institute intensive agriculture or ornamentals on 20-acre lot. And I just don't feel that it's fair to fence them out.
Mr. Chairman, another question?
Anywho.
Up in Multnomah County, I've heard there's some very intensive truck farms growing real high-quality produce. How big are those? Do you have any idea?
I think they vary. I know there are some between Portland and Gresham on some fairly small units, and some up along the South Shore. All those in the urban growth boundary are going out, which makes those of us on the outside who would like to be EFU and see that there are opportunities coming up for us.
Mm-hmm. But you say they're 50 acres or 60 acres? Or
I would say that I've seen some that are as small as 10 to 15 acres, just where there's development scattered around, and there's a chunk here that's being used and a chunk over here, and in some cases they transport them. In one case they transport it to a central distributing point, food stand, if you will. But the lots are actually fairly scattered around. But I would think that you have to make provision for those people and for part-time farmers. You don't want to say that just because you're a part-time farmer that you don't deserve EFU classification if that's what you need. And I just see that we're being just nickel and dimed here and there, every little thing. And in our area, I think that right now we have EFU. And as this bill stands today, I wouldn't be surprised if our neighbors, some of our farming neighbors, also have EFU, could come along and be class marginal. And once they go marginal, pretty soon we start to look marginal. And that takes away our rights to improve what we have.
Questions?
Thank you.
Robert Davis?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'm Robert Davis, owner of St. Helens Golf Course, and I'm president of the Oregon Golf Course Owners Association, and I'm here to urge you not to remove golf courses as a conditional use on EFU land. Basically, what I want to do is just give you some statistics, but first I'd like to read you from the latest National Golf Foundation newsletter, a column by Mr. Joe Much, Director of Field Services. Oregon is the home of one golf course or 18-hole equivalent for every 25,380 of its residents, compared to Michigan's 1 to 17,350 ratio, which is somewhat less favorable than the national average. More alarming for the state's legends of active year-round golfers has been a virtual standstill in new golf course construction in the past few years. Always a popular playground for tourists, the rain-washed Beaver State more recently has been known for tight